Chapter 56. Golden Eyes. The common room of the Wine Spring Inn was silent, but for the scratch of Perrin's pen. Silent and empty, but for him and Aram. Late morning light made small pools beneath the windows. No cooking smells came from the kitchen. There were no fires lit anywhere in the village, and even coals banked in ashes had been doused. No point in giving the gift of fire easy to hand. The tinker, he sometimes wondered whether it was proper to think of Aram that way any longer, but a man could not stop being what he was, sword or no, stood against the wall by the front door watching Perrin. What did the man expect? What did he want? Dipping his pen in the small stone ink jar, Perrin set aside the third sheet of paper and began a fourth. Pushing through the door, bow in hand, Banal Sine rubbed an uneasy finger up and down his big nose. "The Aiel are back," he said quietly. But his feet moved as if he could not make them be still. "Trolloc's coming, from north and south. Thousands of them, Lord Perrin." "Don't call me that," Perrin said absently, frowning at the page. He had no way with words. He certainly did not know how to say things in the fancy way women liked. All he could was write what he felt. Dipping the pen again, he added a few lines. "I will not ask your forgiveness for what I did. I do not know if you could give it, but I will not ask. You are more precious to me than life. Never think I have abandoned you. When the sun shines on you, it is my smile. When you hear the breeze stir through the apple blossoms, it is my whisper that I love you. My love is yours forever, Perrin." For a moment, he studied what he had written. It did not say enough, but it would have to do. He did not have the right words any more than he had time. Carefully blotting the damp ink with sand, he folded the pages together. He very nearly wrote Fayil Bashir on the outside before making it Fayil Ebara. He realized he did not even know if a wife took her husband's name in Saldaia. There were places where they did not. Well, she had married him in the Two Rivers. She would have to put up with Two Rivers customs. He placed the letter in the middle of the mantel over the fireplace, perhaps it would reach her eventually, and adjusted the wide red marriage ribbon behind his collar so it hung down his lapels properly. He was supposed to wear it for 7 days, an announcement to everyone who saw him that he was newly wed. "I will try," he told the letter softly. Fayil had tried to tie one in his beard. He wished he had let her.
"Pardon, Lord Perrin," Ban said, still shifting his feet anxiously. "I didn't hear."
Aram was chewing his lip, his eyes wide and frightened. "Time to see to the day's work," Perrin said. Perhaps the letter would reach her, somehow. He took his bow from the table and slung it on his back. Axe and quiver already hung at his belt. "And don't call me that." In front of the inn, the companions were gathered on their horses, Willal Sine with that fool wolf-head banner, the long staff resting on his stirrup iron. How long since Will had refused to carry the thing? The survivors of those who had joined him the first day jealously guarded the right now. Will, with his bow on his back and a sword at his hip, looked proud as an idiot. As Ban scrambled into his saddle, Perrin heard him say, "A man is as cool as a winter pond. Like ice. Maybe it won't be so bad today." He barely paid attention. The women were gathered on the green. They made a circle 5 or 6 deep around the tall pole, where the larger red wolf head flapped out in a breeze. 5 or 6 deep, shoulder to shoulder, with pole arms made from scythes and pitchforks and wood axes, and even stout kitchen knives and cleavers. Throat tight, he mounted stepper and rode toward them. The children were in a tight mass inside the circle of women. All the children in Emmons Field. Riding slowly along the ranks, he felt the women's eyes following him, and the children's. Fear sent, and worry. The children showed it on their 2 pale faces, but all smelled of it.
He reined in, where Marin Alvear and Daze Conger and the rest of the women's circle stood together. Alsbet Luhan had one of her husband's hammers on her shoulder, and her white cloak helmet, acquired the night of her rescue, sat slightly crooked because of her thick braid. Nisei Ellen held a long-bladed carving knife firm in her hand, and had two more stuck behind her belt.
"We have planned this out,"
Daze said, looking up at him as if she expected an argument and did not intend to allow it. She held a pitchfork, fastened to a pole nearly 3 feet taller than she, upright in front of her.
"If the Trollocs break through anywhere, you men are going to be busy, so we will take the children out. The older ones know what to do, and they've all played hide-and-seek in the woods. Just to keep them safe until they can come out."
The older ones. Boys and girls of 13 and 14 had toddlers strapped on their backs and held smaller children by the hand. Girls older than that stood in the ranks with the women. Bode Coffin had a wood axe gripped in both hands, her sister Eldrin a boar spear with a broad point. Boys older were out with the men or up in the thatched rooftops with their bows. The tinkers were in with the children. Perrin glanced down at Aram, standing by his stirrup. They would not fight, but each adult had two babes fastened on his or her back and another cradled in the crook of an elbow. Rain and Isla, each with an arm around the other, would not look at him. Just to keep them safe until they could come out. "I'm sorry." He had to stop and clear his throat. He had not meant it to come to this. Think as hard as he could, nothing else came that he could have done. Even giving himself to the Trollocs would not have stopped them killing and burning. The end would have been the same. "It was not fair, what I did with Fail, but I had to. Please understand that. I had to."
"Don't be silly, Perrin,"
Alsbet said, voice emphatic but round face smiling warmly.
"I can never abide it when you're silly. Do you think we would expect you to do any different?"
A heavy cleaver in one hand, Marin reached up to pat his knee with the other.
"Any man worth cooking a meal for would have done the same."
"Thank you."
Light, but he sounded hoarse. In a minute he would be snuffling like a girl. But for some reason he could not smooth his voice. They must think him an idiot.
"Thank you. I shouldn't have fooled you. But she'd not have gone if she suspected."
"Oh, Perrin."
Marin laughed. She actually laughed, with all they faced and smelling of fear as she did. He wished he had half her courage.
"We knew what you were up to before you ever put her on her horse. And I am not sure she didn't as well. Women do find themselves doing what they don't want just to please you men. Now you go on and do what you have to. This is women's circle business," she added firmly.
Somehow he managed to smile back at her.
"Yes, mistress," he said, knuckling his forehead. "Beg pardon. I know enough to keep my nose out of that."
The women around her laughed in soft amusement as he turned Stepper away. Ban and Tell were riding right behind him, he realized, with the rest of the companions strung out after Will and the Banner. He motioned the pair to come up beside him.
"If things go badly today," he said, when they were on either side of him, "the companions are to come back here and help the women."
"But—"
He cut Tell's protest short.
"You do what I say. If it goes wrong, you get the women and children out. You hear me?"
They nodded, reluctantly, but they did it.
"What about you?"
Ban asked quietly. Perrin ignored him.
"Aram, you stick with the companions."
Striding along between Stepper and Tell's shaggy horse, the tinker did not even look up.
"I go where you go."
He said it simply, but his tone left no room for argument. He was going to do as he wanted, whatever Perrin said. Perrin wondered if real lords ever had problems like this. At the west end of the green, the white cloaks were all mounted, cloaks with the golden sunburst bright, helmets and armor gleaming, lance points shining, a long column of fours that stretched back between the nearest houses. They must have spent half the night polishing. Dame Bornhold and Jarret Byar swung their horses to face Perrin. Bornhold sat straight in his saddle, but he smelled of apple brandy. Byar's gaunt face twisted with an even deeper rage than usual as he stared at Perrin.
"I thought you would be at your places by now," Perrin said.
Bornhold frowned at his horse's mane, not answering. After a moment, Byar spat.
"We are leaving here, Shadow Spawn."
An angry mutter rose from the companions, but the hollow-eyed man ignored them, as he did Aram's reaching over his shoulder to his sword hilt.
"We will cut our way back to Watch Hill through your friends and rejoin the rest of our men."
Leaving. Over 400 soldiers leaving. White cloaks, but mounted soldiers, not farmers. Soldiers who had agreed, Bornhold had agreed, to support the Two Rivers men wherever the fighting was hottest. If Emmonsfield was to have any chance at all, he had to hang on to these men. Stepper tossed his head and snorted as if catching his rider's mood.
"Do you still believe I'm a dark friend, Bornhold? How many attacks have you seen so far? Those Trollocs have tried to kill me as much as anybody else."
Bornhold raised his head slowly, eyes haunted and at the same time half-glazed. Hands in steel-backed gauntlets flexed on his reins unconsciously.
"Do you think I do not know by now that these defenses were prepared without you? It was none of your doing, yes? I will not keep my men here to watch you feed your own villagers to the Trollocs. Will you dance atop a pile of their bodies when it is done? Shadow Spawn! Not ours! I mean to live long enough to see you brought to justice."
Perrin patted Stepper's neck to quiet the stallion. He had to keep these men.
"You want me? Very well. When it's over, when the Trollocs are done, I'll not resist if you try to arrest me."
"No!"
Ban and Tell shouted together, and growls built behind them from the others. Aram peered up at Perrin, stricken.
"An empty promise," Bornhold sneered. "You mean everyone to die here, save yourself."
"You'll never know if you run away, will you?"
Perrin made his voice hard and contemptuous.
"I will keep my promise, but if you run, you might never find me again. Run if you want. Run and try to forget what happens here. All your talk of protecting people from Trollocs. How many died at Trolloc hands after you came? My family wasn't the first, and certainly not the last. Run! Or stay if you can remember your men. If you need to find the courage, look at the women, Bornhold. Any one of them is braver than the whole lot of you white cloaks."
Bornhold shook as though every word were a blow. Perrin thought the man might fall out of his saddle. Swaying upright, Bornhold stared at him.
"We will remain," he said hoarsely.
"But my lord Bornhold," Byar protested.
"Clean!"
Bornhold roared at him.
"If we must die here, we will die clean."
He wrenched his head back to Perrin, spittle on his lips.
"We will remain. But at the last, I will see you dead, Shadow Spawn. For my family, for my father, I will see you dead."
Sawing his horse around roughly, he cantered back to his white-cloaked column. Byar bared his teeth in a wordless snarl at Perrin before following.
"You do not mean to keep that promise," Aram said anxiously. "You cannot."
"I have to check everyone," Perrin said. Small chance he would live long enough to keep it.
"There isn't much time."
He booted Stepper in the flanks and the horse leaped forward toward the west end of the village. Behind the sharp stakes facing the westward, men crouched with their spears and halberds and pole arms fashioned by Harald Luhan, who was there in his blacksmith's vest with a scythe blade on the end of an 8-foot shaft. Behind them stood the men with bows in ranks broken by 4 catapults. Abel Cawthon was walking along slowly to speak to each man. Perrin reined in beside Abel.
"Word is they're coming from north and south," he said quietly. "But keep a sharp eye."
"We'll watch, and I'm ready to send half my men wherever they are needed. They'll not find Two Rivers folk easy meat."
Abel's grin was reminiscent of his son's. To Perrin's embarrassment, the men raised a ragged cheer as he rode by, with the companions and the banner at his heels.
Golden eyes! Golden eyes!
And now and then a, Lord Perrin! He knew he should have stamped harder on that in the beginning. To the south, Tam had charge, more grim-faced than able and striding almost like a warder, hand resting on his sword hilt. That wolfish, deadly grace looked strange on the blocky, gray-haired farmer. Yet his words to Perrin were not so different from Abel's.
We Two Rivers folk are a tougher lot than most know, he said quietly. Don't you worry, we will not do ourselves proud today.
Alana was at one of the six catapults here, fussing over a large stone being lifted into the cup on the end of the thick arm. Ivan set his horse near her, in his warder's color-changing cloak, slender as a steel blade, and alert as a hawk. There was no doubt he had chosen his ground, wherever Alana was, and his fight, to bring her out alive, whatever. He barely looked at Perrin. But the Aes Sedai paused, hands hovering over the stone, eyes following him as he passed. He could all but feel her weighing and measuring and judging. Those cheers followed him, too. Where the hedge of stakes ran beyond the few houses east of the Wine Spring Inn, John Thane and Samuel Craw had charge between them. Perrin told them what he had able, and once again got much the same reply. John, in a mail shirt with holes rusted through in several places, had seen the smoke of his mill burning, and Samuel, with his horse face and long nose, was sure he had seen the smoke of his farm. Neither expected an easy day, but both wore stony determination like cloaks. It was to the north that Perrin had decided to make his fight. Fingering the ribbon hanging down one lapel, he peered in the direction of Watch Hill, the direction Fail had gone, and wondered why he had chosen the north side.
Fly free, Fail. Fly free, my heart.
He supposed it was as good a place to die as any. Bran supposedly was in charge here, in his steel cap and disc-sewn metal jerkin, but he stopped checking the men along the hedge to give Perrin as much of a bow as his girth would allow. Gaul and Chiad stood ready, heads wrapped in shufa and faces hidden to the eyes behind black veils. Side by side, Perrin noted. Whatever had passed between them, it seemed to outweigh their clan's blood feud. Loyal had a pair of wood axes, dwarfed in his huge hands. His tufted ears thrust forward fiercely, and his face was grim.
Do you think I would run away?
He had said when Perrin suggested he could slip off into the night after Fail. His ears had dropped with weariness and hurt.
I came with you, Perrin, and I will stay until you go.
And then he had laughed suddenly, a deep booming sound that almost rattled the dishes.
Perhaps someone will even tell a story of me one day. We do not go in for such things, but there could be an Ogier hero, I suppose. A joke, Perrin. I made a joke. Laugh! Come, we will tell each other jokes and laugh and think of Fail flying free.
It is no joke, Loyal, Perrin muttered as he rode along the lines of men, trying not to listen to their cheers. You are a hero whether you want to be or not. The Ogier gave him a tight, wide-mouthed grin before setting his eyes back on the cleared ground beyond the hedge. White-striped sticks marked 100-pace intervals out to 500. Beyond that lay quilted fields, to bock and barley, most trampled in earlier attacks, and hedges and low stone fences, and copses of leather leaf, pine, and oak. So many faces Perrin knew in those waiting ranks of men. Stout Eward Candwin, and lantern-jawed Pate Alcar, with spears. White-haired Buell Dowtry, the Fletcher, stood with the bowmen, of course. There was stocky, gray-haired Jack Alcine, and his bald cousin Wit, and gnarled Flan Lewin, a lanky beanpole like all of his male kin. J.M. Torfin and Hugh Marwyn, among the first to ride after him. They had felt too uncomfortable to join the companions, as if missing the ambush in the waterwood had opened some gap between them and the others. Elam Dowtree, and Dav Aellen, and Ewan Fingar. Harry Coplin and his brother Darl, and old Billy Conger. Baron Thane, the miller's brother, and fat Athan Dern, and Kevrim Al-Alzar, whose grandsons had grown sons, and Tuck Patwin, the carpenter, and... Making himself stop counting them, Perrin rode to where Varen stood beside one of the catapults, under the watchful eye of Tomas on his gray. The plump, brown-clad Aes Sedai studied Aram a moment before turning her bird-like gaze up to Perrin, one eyebrow raised as if to question why he was bothering her. "I'm a little surprised to see you and Alana still here," he told her. "Hunting girls who can learn to channel can't be worth getting killed. Or keeping a string tied to a Tavirin, either."
"Is that what we are doing?"
Folding her hands at her waist, she tilted her head to one side thoughtfully.
"No," she said at last. "I do not think we could go quite yet. You are a very interesting study, as much as Rand in your own way, and young Matt. Could I only split myself into three, I would latch one onto each of you, and follow you every moment of the day and night, even if I had to marry you."
"I already have a wife." It felt odd saying that. Odd and good. He had a wife, and she was safe. She shattered his moment of reverie.
"Yes, you do. But you do not know what marrying Zareen Bashir means, do you?"
She reached up to turn his axe in its loop on his belt, studying it.
"When are you going to give this up for the hammer?"
Staring at the Aes Sedai, he reined Stepper back a pace, pulling the axe out of her hands before he knew it. What marrying Fayil meant? Give up the axe? What did she mean? What did she know?
"Isam!"
The guttural roar rose like thunder, and Trollocs appeared, each half again as tall as a man and twice as wide, trotting into the fields to halt beyond bowshot, a hulking, black-mailed mass, deep and stretching the length of the village. Thousands of them packed together, huge faces distorted by beaks and snouts, heads with horns or feathered crests, spikes at elbows and shoulders, scythe-curved swords and spiked axes, hooked spears and barbed tridents, a seemingly endless sea of cruel weapons. Behind them, Murdrol galloped up and down on midnight horses, raven black cloaks hanging undisturbed as they whirled their mounts.
"Isam!"
"Interesting," Varen murmured.
Perrin would not have thought that was the word. This was the first time the Trollocs had shouted anything understandable. Not that he had any idea what it meant. Smoothing his marriage ribbon, he forced himself to ride calmly to the center of the Two Rivers line. The companions formed behind him, the breeze lifting the banner with its red wolf head. Aram had his sword out in both hands.
"Be ready,"
Perrin called. His voice was steady. He could not believe it.
"Isam!"
And the black tide rolled forward, howling wordlessly. Fayil was safe. Nothing else mattered. He would not let himself see the faces of the men stretched out to either side of him. He heard the same howls drifting from the south. Both sides at once. They had never tried that before. Fayil was safe.
"At 400 paces!"
All along the ranks, bows rose together. Closer the howling mass came, long thick legs eating ground. Closer.
"Loose!"
The snap of bowstrings was lost in the Trolloc War, but a goose-fletched hail streaked the sky as it arced out, plunged down into the black-mailed horde. Stones from the catapults erupted in fiery balls and sharp splinters in those seething ranks. Trollocs fell. Perrin saw them go down, trampled beneath boots and hooves. Even some Murdrol fell. Yet the tidal wave rushed on, closing holes and gaps, apparently undiminished. There was no need to order another volley. A second followed the first as quickly as men could knock arrows. A second rain of broadhead points rising before the first dropped, the third following behind, the fourth, the fifth. Fire exploded among the Trollocs as fast as the catapult arms could be winched down. Varen galloping from catapult to catapult to lean down from her saddle. And the huge bellowing forms came on, crying in no language Perrin understood, but crying for blood. Human blood and flesh. Men crouching behind the stakes readied themselves, hefting their weapons. Perrin felt cold inside. He could see the ground behind the Trolloc charge already littered with their dead and dying, yet it hardly seemed they were fewer. Stepper pranced nervously, but he could not hear the Dun's wicker for the rolling howls of the Trollocs. The axe came into his hand smoothly, long half-moon blade and thick spike catching the sunlight. Not midday yet. My heart is yours forever, Fael. This time, he did not think the stakes would. Not even slowing, the front rank of Trollocs ran onto the sharp stakes, faces contorted by snouts or beaks twisting with pained shrieks, howling as they were impaled, driven down by more huge shapes, scrambling up over their backs. Some of those falling among the stakes, replaced by more, always more. One last volley of arrows drove home at point-blank range, and then it was the spears and halberds and homemade pole arms, thrusting and stabbing at towering forms in black mail, sometimes falling while the bowmen shot as best they could at the inhuman faces above their friends' heads. Boys shooting down from the rooftops as well. Madness and death and ear-splitting roars and screams and howls. Slowly, inexorably, the Two Rivers line bulged inward at a dozen places. If it broke anywhere...
Fall back!
Perrin bellowed. A boar-snouted Trolloc, already bleeding, forced its way through the ranks of men, shrieking and striking with its thick, curved sword. Perrin's axe split its head to the snout. Stepper was trying to rear, screaming silently in the din.
Fall back!
Darl Coplin went down, clutching a thigh transfixed by a wrist-thick spear. Old Billy Conger tried to drag him backward while awkwardly wielding a boar spear. Harry Coplin swung his halberd in defense of his brother, mouth wide in a seemingly soundless shout.
Fall back between the houses!
He was not sure whether others heard and passed the order, or the mountainous weight of Trollocs simply pressed in. But slowly, one grudging step at a time, the humans moved back. Loyal swung his bloodied axes like mallets, wide mouth snarling. Beside the Ilgir, Bran thrust his spear grimly. He had lost his steel cap, and blood ran in his fringe of gray hair. From his stallion, Tomas carved a space around Varen. Hair in wild disarray, she had lost her horse. Balls of fire streaked from her hands, and every Trolloc struck exploded in flames as if soaked in oil. Not enough to hold. The Two Rivers men edged back, jostling around Stepper. Gaul and Chiad fought back to back. She had only one spear left, and he slashed and stabbed with his heavy knife. Back. To west and east, men had curved out from the defenses there to keep the Trollocs from flanking them, pouring arrows in. Not enough. Back. Suddenly a huge ram-horn shape was trying to pull Perrin out of the saddle, trying to climb up after him. Thrashing, Stepper went down under the combined weight. Leg pinned and pained near to breaking, Perrin struggled to bring his axe around, to fight hands bigger than an ogre's away from his throat. The Trolloc screamed as Aram's sword sliced into its neck. As it collapsed atop Perrin, spraying blood, the tinker spun smoothly to run another Trolloc through the middle. Grunting with pain, Perrin kicked his way clear, aided by Stepper scrambling to his feet, but there was no time to think of remounting. He barely rolled aside as a black horse's hooves stamped where his head had been. Pale and eyeless face snarling, the fade leaned from its saddle as he tried to rise, dead black sword slashing, brushing his hair as he dropped. Ruthlessly, he swung his axe, chopping one of the horse's legs out from under it. Horse and rider toppled together. As they fell, he buried his axe where the half-man's eyes should have been. He wrenched the blade free in time to see Daze Conger's pitchfork tines take a goat-snouted Trolloc in the throat. It seized the long shaft with one hand, stabbing a barbed spear at her with the other. But Marn Alvir calmly hamstrung it with one blow of her cleaver. The leg gave way, and she just as coolly severed the Trolloc's spine at the base of its neck. Another Trolloc lifted Bode Cawthon into the air by her braid, Mouth wide in a terrified scream, she sank her wood axe into its mailed shoulder, just as her sister Eldrin thrust her boar spear through its chest, and gray-braided Nisa Aellen drove a thick butchering knife in as well. All up and down the line, as far as Perrin could see, the women were there. Their numbers were the only reason the line still held, almost driven back against the houses. Women among the men, shoulder to shoulder, some no more than girls. But then some of those men had never shaved yet. Some never would. Where were the white cloaks? The children! If the women were here, there was no one to get the children out. Where are the bloody white cloaks? If they came now, at least they might buy another few minutes. A few minutes to get the children away. A boy, the same dark-haired runner who had come for him the night before, seized his arm as he turned to search for the companions. The companions had to try to cut a way out for the children. He would send them and do what he could here.
Lord Perrin!
The boy shouted at him through the deafening din.
Lord Perrin!
Perrin tried to shake him off, then snatched him up, kicking under one arm. He belonged with the other children. Split up in tight ranks, stretching from house to house, Ban and Tell and the other companions were shooting from their saddles over the heads of the men and women. Will had driven the banner's staff into the ground so he could work his bow, too. Somehow, Tell had managed to catch up Stepper. The Dun's reins were tied to Tell's saddle. The boy could go on Stepper's back.
Lord Perrin, please listen! Master Althor says somebody's attacking the Trollocs! Lord Perrin!
Perrin was halfway to Tell, hobbling on his bruised leg when it penetrated. He stuffed the axe haft through his belt to hoist the boy up in front of his face by the shoulders.
Attacking them? Who? I don't know, Lord Perrin. Master Althor said to tell you he thought he heard somebody shouting, Devon Ride!
Aram grabbed Perrin's arm, wordlessly pointing with his bloody sword. Perrin turned in time to see a hail of arrows plunge into the Trollocs. From the north. Another flight was already rising toward the top of its arc.
Go back to the other children, he said, setting the boy down.
He had to be up where he could see.
Go! You did well, boy,
he added as he ran awkwardly for Stepper. The little fellow scampered back into the village, grinning. Every step sent a jolt of pain up Perrin's leg. Maybe the thing was broken. He had no time to worry about that. Seizing the reins Tell tossed him, he hauled himself up into his saddle and wondered if he was seeing what he wanted to see instead of what was really there. Beneath a red eagle banner at the edge of where the fields had stood, long rows of men in farmer's clothes, shooting their bows methodically. And beside the banner, Fael sat Swallow's saddle, Bane at her stirrup. It had to be Bane behind that black veil, and he could see Fael's face clearly. She looked excited, fearful, terrified, and exuberant. She looked beautiful. Murdral were trying to turn some of the Trollocs around, trying to lead a charge against the Watch Hill men, but it was useless. Even Trollocs who did turn went down before they covered 50 strides. A fade and its horse fell, not to arrows, but to panicked Trolloc hands and spears. It was the Trollocs moving back now, then running in a frenzy, fleeing shots from both sides, once the Emmons fieldmen had room to lift their bows, too. Trollocs falling, Murdral going down. It was a slaughter, but Perrin hardly saw. Fael. The same boy appeared at his stirrup.
Lord Perrin,
he shouted, to be heard above cheering now. Men and women shouting for joy and relief as the last Trollocs who had not made it out of bow range fell. Not many had, Perrin believed, but he was barely able to think. Fael. The boy tugged at his breeches leg.
Lord Perrin, Master Althor said to tell you the Trollocs are breaking. And they are shouting Devon Ride. The men, I mean. I heard them.
Perrin bent to ruffle the boy's curly hair.
What's your name, lad? J.M. Barra, Lord Perrin. I'm your cousin, I think. Sort of, anyway.
Perrin squeezed his eyes shut for a moment to keep the tears in. Even when he opened them, his hand still trembled in the lad's head.
Well, cousin J.M., you tell your children about today. You tell your grandchildren, your grandchildren's children. I'm not going to have any, J.M. said stoutly. Girls are horrible. They laugh at you and they don't like to do anything worth doing. and you never understand what they're saying.
I think one day you'll find out they're the opposite of horrible. Some of it won't change, but that will. Fayil.
JM looked doubtful, but then he brightened, a wide grin spreading across his face.
Wait till I tell Had. Lord Perrin called me cousin.
And he darted away to tell Had, who would have children too, and all the other boys who would one day. The sun stood straight overhead. An hour, maybe. It had all taken no more than an hour. It felt like a lifetime. Stepper moved forward, and he realized he must have dug his heels in. Cheering people made way for the dun, and he hardly heard them. There were great gaps where Trollocs had broken down the stakes with sheer weight of numbers. He rode through one over a mound of dead Trollocs and never noticed. Dead Trollocs, bristling with arrows, carpeted the open ground, and here and there a pincushioned fade flailed and thrashed. He saw none of it. He had eyes for only one thing. Fayil. She started out from the Watch Hill men, pausing to stop Bane from following, and rode to meet him. She rode so gracefully, as if the black mare were part of her, slimly erect, guiding Swallow more with her knees than the reins held so casually in one hand. The red marriage ribbon still twined through her hair, the ends dangling past her shoulders. He must find her flowers. For a moment, those tilted eyes studied him. Her mouth. Surely she could not be uncertain, but she smelled it.
I said I would go,
she said finally, holding her head high. Swallow danced sideways, neck arched, and Fayil mastered the mare without seeming to notice.
I did not say how far. You cannot say I did.
He could not say anything. She was so beautiful. He just wanted to look at her, to see her, beautiful, alive, with him. Her scent was clean sweat with just the slightest hint of herbal soap. He was not sure whether he wanted to laugh or cry. Maybe both. He wanted to pull all the smell of her into his lungs. Frowning, she went on.
They were ready, Perrin. Truly they were. I barely had to say anything to convince them to come. The Trollocs had hardly bothered them at all, but they could see the smoke. We traveled hard, Bane and I, and reached Watch Hill well before first light. And we started back as soon as the sun rose.
Her frown became a wide smile, eager and proud. Such a beautiful smile. Her dark eyes sparkled.
They followed me, Perrin. They followed me. Even Tenobia has never led men in battle. She wanted to once, when I was 8, but Father had a talk with her alone in her chambers, and when he rode off to the Blight, she stayed behind.
With a rueful grin, she added,
I think you and he use the same method sometimes. Tenobia exiled him, but she was only 16, and the Council of Lords managed to change her mind after a few weeks. She will be blue with envy when I tell her.
Again she paused, this time drawing a deep breath and planting a fist on her hip.
Aren't you going to say anything? She demanded impatiently. Are you just going to sit there like a hairy lump? I did not say I would leave the Two Rivers. You said that, not I. You've no right to be angry because I did not do what I never promised. And you trying to send me away because you thought you were going to die. I came back to...
I love you.
It was all he could say, but strangely it seemed to be enough. No sooner were the words out of his mouth than she reined Swallow close enough to throw an arm around him and press her face against his chest. She seemed to be trying to squeeze him in two. He stroked her dark hair gently, just feeling the silkiness of it, just feeling her.
I was so afraid I would be too late, she said into his coat. The Watch Hill men marched as fast as they could, but when we arrived and I saw the Trollocs fighting right in among the houses, so many of them, as if the village were being buried in an avalanche, and I couldn't see you.
She drew a shivering breath and let it out slowly. When she spoke again, her voice was calmer. Just.
Did the men from Devon Ride come?
He gave a start, and his hand stopped stroking.
Yes, they did. How did you know? Did you arrange that too?
She began shaking. It took him a moment to know she was laughing. No, my heart. Though I would have if I could. When that man came with his message, "We are coming," I thought, hoped, that that was what it meant. Pulling her face back a little, she looked up at him seriously. I could not tell you, Perrin. I could not raise your hopes when I only suspected. It would have been too cruel if... Don't be angry with me, Perrin. Laughing, he lifted her out of her saddle and set her sideways in front of his. She laughed her protests and stretched across the high pommel to put both arms around him. I will never, ever be angry with you, I swear. She cut him off with a hand over his mouth. Mother says the worst thing Father ever did to her was vow never to be angry with her. It took her a year to force him to take it back, and she says he was hardly fit to live with long before then from holding in. You will be angry with me, Perrin, and I with you. If you want to make me another wedding vow, Val, you will not hide it when you are. I cannot deal with what you will not let me see, my husband. My husband, she repeated in a satisfied tone, snuggling against him. I do like the sound of that. He noticed she did not say she would always let him know when she was angry. On past experience, he would have to discover it the hard way at least half the time. And she made no promises not to keep secrets from him again, either. Right then, it did not matter so long as she was with him. I will let you know when I'm angry, my wife, he promised. She gave him a slanted look, as if she was not sure how to take that. You won't ever come to understand them, Cousin J.M., but you won't care. Abruptly, he became aware of the dead Trollocs all around him. Like a black field full of feathered weeds, the thrashing murderer still refusing to die, finally. Slowly he turned stepper. A slaughter yard and a shambles of shadow spawn, stretching for hundreds of paces in every direction. Crows hopped across the ground already, and vultures soared overhead in a huge milling cloud. No ravens, though. And the same to the south, according to Jaim. He could see the vultures wheeling beyond the village for proof. Not enough to repay for Dessel, or Adora, or little Pate, or... Not enough. It would never be enough. Nothing could ever repay for them. He hugged Fail, hard enough to make her grunt. But when he tried to ease up, she put her hands on his arms, gripping just as hard to keep them where they were. She was enough. People were streaming out of Emmons Field, Bran limping and using his spear for a staff, Marin smiling with an arm around him, Daze being hugged by her husband Wit, and Gaul and Chiat hand in hand with their veils down. Loyal's ears drooped wearily, and Tam had blood on his face, and Flan Luan was standing only with the help of his wife, Adina. There was blood on nearly everyone, and hasty bandages. But they came out in a widening throng, Ilum and Dav, and Ewen and Aram, Eward Candwin and Bool Doughtry, Hugh and Tad the stableman from the Winespring Inn, Ban and Tell and the companions riding with that banner still. This time he did not see the missing faces, only those who were still there. Varen and Alana on their horses with Tomas and Ivan riding close behind. Old Billy Conger waving a jug that surely held ale, or better yet, brandy. And Sen Bui, as gnarled as ever, if bruised, and Jack Alcyon with an arm around his wife, and his sons and daughters around him with their wives and husbands. Rain and Isla, still with the babes on their backs. More. Faces he did not know at all. Men who must be from Devon Ride and the farms down there. Boys and girls running among them, laughing. They fanned out to either side, forming a great hollow circle with the Watch Hill men, Fail and him at its center. Everyone avoided the dying fades, but it was as if they did not see the shadow spawn lying everywhere, only the pair on stepper. Silently they watched until Perrin began to feel nervous. Why doesn't somebody say something? Why are they staring like that? The White Cloaks appeared, riding slowly out of the village in their long, gleaming column of fours, Dane Bornhald at their head with Jared Byer. Every white cloak shone as though freshly laundered. Every lance slanted at precisely the same angle. Sullen mutters rose, but people moved aside to let them enter the circle. Bornhald raised a gauntleted hand, halting the column in a jingle of bridles and creak of saddles, when he faced Perrin.
"It is done, Shadow Spawn."
Byer's mouth quivered on the brink of a snarl, but Bornhald's face never changed. His voice never rose.
"The Trollocs are done here. As we agreed, I arrest you now for Dark Friend and murderer."
"No!"
Fael twisted around to stare up at Perrin, eyes angry.
"What does he mean, as you agreed?"
Her words were nearly drowned by the roar from every side.
"No, no, and you will not take him, and Golden Eyes."
Keeping his gaze on Bornhald, Perrin lifted a hand, and silence descended slowly. When all was quiet, he said,
"I said I would not resist if you aided."
Surprising how calm his voice was. Inside, he seethed with a slow, cold anger.
"If you aided, White Cloak, where were you?"
The man did not answer. Dais Conger stepped out from the encircling throng with Wit, who clung to her arm as if he never intended to let go of her again. For that matter, her stout arm was wrapped around Wit's shoulders in much the same fashion. They made an odd picture as she planted her pitchfork pole arm firmly, her the taller by a head, and holding her considerably smaller husband as though she meant to protect him.
"They were on the green," she announced loudly, "all lined up and sitting their horses pretty as girls ready for a dance at Sunday. They never stirred. It was that made us come."
A fierce murmur of agreement rippled from the women.
"When we saw you were about to be overrun. And they just sat there like bumps on a log."
Bornhald did not take his eyes from Perrin for an instant. He did not even blink.
"Did you think I would trust you?" he sneered. "Your plan only failed because these others arrived, yes? And you can claim no part in that."
Fael shifted. Without looking away from the man, Perrin laid a finger across her lips just as she opened her mouth. She bit him hard, but she did not say anything. Bornhald's voice finally began to rise.
"I will see you hang, Shadow Spawn. I will see you hang whatever it takes. I will see you dead if the world burns."
The last came as a shout. Byar's sword slid a hand of bare steel from its scabbard. A massive white cloak behind him, Faron, Perrin thought his name was, drew his completely with a pleased smile rather than Byar's toothy snarl. They froze as quivers rattled to arrows being drawn, and bows came up all around the circle, fletchings drawn to ear, every broadhead shaft pointed at a white cloak. Up and down the thick column, high-cantled saddles creaked as men shifted uneasily. Bornhald showed no sign of fear, and he did not smell of it either. His scent was all hate. He ran almost fevered eyes over the two rivers folk encircling his men and returned them to Perrin just as hot and hate-filled. Perrin motioned downward, and tension was let off bowstrings reluctantly, bows lowered slowly.
"You would not help."
His voice was cold iron, anvil hard.
"Since you came to the Two Rivers, the help you've given has been almost accidental. You never really cared if people were burned out, killed, so long as you could find somebody to call Dark Friend."
Bornhald shivered, though his eyes still burned.
"It is time for you to go. Not just from Emmons Field. It is time for you to gather up your white cloaks and leave the Two Rivers. Now, Bornhald. You are going now."
"I will see you hang one day," Bornhald said softly.
He jerked his hand for the column to follow and booted his horse forward as if he meant to ride Perrin over. Perrin moved Stepper aside. He wanted these men gone, not more killing. Let the man have a final gesture of defiance. Bornhald never turned his head, but hollow-cheeked Byar stared silent hate at Perrin, and Faron seemed to look at him with regret for some reason.
The others kept their eyes front as they passed in a jingle of tack and the clop of hooves. Silently, the circle opened to let them out, heading north. A knot of 10 or 12 men approached Perrin on foot, some in mismatched bits and pieces of old armor, all grinning anxiously as the last of the white cloaks went by. He did not recognize any of them. A wide-nosed, leathery-faced fellow seemed to be their leader, his white hair bare, but a rusty mail shirt covering him to the knees, though the collar of a farmer's coat poked up around his neck. He bowed awkwardly over his bow.
"Jan Vabastir, my lord, Perrin. Jair, they call me."
He spoke hurriedly, as if afraid of being interrupted.
"Pardon for bothering you. Some of us will see the white cloaks along, if that's all right with you. A good many want to get on home, even if we can't get there before dark. There's as many white cloaks again in Watch Hill, but they would not come. Had orders to hold fast, they said. Bunch of fools, if you ask me. And we're more than tired of having them around, poking their noses into people's houses and trying to make you accuse your neighbor of something. We'll see them off, if that's all right with you."
He gave Fael an abashed look, ducking his broad chin, but the flow of words did not slow.
"Pardon, my lady Fael. Didn't mean to bother you and your lord. Just wanted to let him know we're with him. A fine woman you have there, my lord. A fine woman. No offense meant, my lady. Well, we've daylight still, and talk shears no sheep. Pardon for bothering you, my lord Perrin. Pardon, my lady Fael."
He bowed again, imitated by the others, and they hurried away with him herding them, muttering at them,
"No time for us to be bothering the lord and his lady. There's work to do yet."
"Who was that?" Perrin said, a trifle stunned by the torrent. Days and Sen together could not talk that much.
"Do you know him, Fael?"
"From Watch Hill."
"Master Barstier is the mayor of Watch Hill, and the others are the village council. The Watch Hill Women's Circle will be sending a delegation down under their wisdom once they're certain it is safe. To see if this Lord Perrin is right for the Two Rivers, they say. But they all wanted me to show them how to curtsy to you. And the wisdom, Adele Galen, is bringing you some of her dried apple tarts."
"Oh, burn me," he breathed. It was spreading. He knew he should have stamped it down hard in the beginning.
"Don't call me that,"
he shouted after the departing men.
"I'm a blacksmith. Do you hear me? A blacksmith."
Jer Barstier turned to wave at him and nod before hurrying the others on. Chortling, Fael tugged at his beard.
"You are a sweet fool, my lord blacksmith. It is too late to turn back now."
Suddenly her smile became truly wicked.
"Husband, is there any possibility you might be alone with your wife any time soon? Marriage seems to have made me as bold as a Domani Gaul. I know you must be tired, but..."
She cut off with a small shriek and clung to his coat as he booted stepper to a gallop toward the Winespring Inn. For once, the cheers that followed did not bother him at all.
"Golden Eyes! Lord Perrin! Golden Eyes!"
From the thick branch of a leafy oak on the edge of the Westwood, Ordeath stared at Emmonsfield a mile to the south. It was impossible.
"Scourge them! Flay them!"
Everything had been going according to plan. Even Isom had played into his hands.
Why did the fool stop bringing Trollocs? He should have brought in enough to turn the Two Rivers black with them.
Spittle dripped from his lips, but he did not notice, any more than he realized that his hand was fumbling at his belt.
"Harry them till their hearts burst. Harrow them into the ground screaming."
All planned to pull Randall Thor to him, and it came to this. The Two Rivers had not even been scratched. A few farms burned did not count, nor a few farmers butchered alive for Trolloc cookpots.
"I want the Two Rivers to burn. Burn so the fire lives in men's memories for 1,000 years.
He studied the banner waving over the village and the one not that far below him. A scarlet wolf head on scarlet-bordered white and a red eagle. Red for the blood the Two Rivers must shed to make Randall Thor howl.
Manetherin. That's meant to be Manetherin's banner.
Someone had told them of Manetherin, had they? What did these fools know of the glories of Manetherin?
Manetherin? Yes. There was more than one way to scourge them.
He laughed so hard he nearly fell out of the yoke before he realized that he was not holding on with both hands, that one gripped his belt where a dagger should have hung. The laugh twisted into a snarl as he stared at that hand. The White Tower held what had been stolen from him, what was his by right as old as the Trolloc Wars. He let himself drop to the ground and scrambled onto his horse before looking at his companions. His hounds. The 30 or so white cloaks remaining no longer wore their white cloaks, of course. Rust spotted their dull plate and mail, and Bornhold would never have recognized those sullen, suspicious faces, dirty and unshaven. The humans watched Ordeath, distrustful, yet afraid, not even glancing at the Murdrol in their midst, its slug-pale, eyeless face as bleakly wooden as theirs. The half-man feared Isom would find it. Isom had not at all been pleased when that raid on Taran Ferry let so many escape to carry away word of what was happening in the Two Rivers. Ordeath giggled at the thought of Isom discomforted. The man was a problem for another time, if he still lived.
"We ride for Tar Valon," he snapped.
Hard riding to beat Bornhold to the ferry. Manetherin's banner raised again in the Two Rivers after all these centuries. How the Red Eagle had harried him so long ago.
"But Camelan first."
"Scourge them and flay them. Let the Two Rivers pay first, and then Randall Thor, and then..." Laughing, he galloped north through the forest, not looking back to see if the others followed. They would. They had nowhere else to go now.